from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Last week, Berkeley passed the nation's first cell phone right-to-know ordinance, requiring retailers to warn customers of potential radiation exposure. Industry groups are expected to sue to block the law, and while many scientists and medical professionals say evidence of harm is inconclusive, nearly 200 scientists have called on the United Nations and World Health Organization to adopt tougher regulations for phones and other products that emit electromagnetic fields. Joining us to talk about this law that was passed 9-0, by the way, on Tuesday by the Berkeley City Council, is Joel Moskowitz. He's director of the Center for Family and Community Health, the School of Public Health at the University of California, Berkeley. He is a signatory and organizer of the appeal. And welcome, Joel Moskowitz.
Thank you for inviting me.
Glad to have you, and glad to have Alan Balmain here in studio with us. Alan Balmain is a professor with the Helen Diller Family Comprehensive Cancer Center at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Joel Moskowitz, let me begin with you. You know, there's a lot of confusion about this, and let's see if we can get through some of that. Because on the one hand, you have people saying, well, you know, this is typical of Berserkly, and this is not something that we need, and there's really no empirical evidence. On the other hand, you have actual manuals and online warnings that have come from the industry themselves, which a lot of people don't know about. So maybe from your perspective, why is this necessary?
Well, first of all, this is not specific to Berkeley. Berkeley just happens to be the second city to try to attempt this. San Francisco, you may remember, tried this a few years ago, and the industry basically fought them in court for 2 years until the city no longer had the political will to pursue it, so they dropped the law. But four other cities have tried in the past, and six states, including California, have tried in the past to pass similar legislation. Also, some major organizations in the U.S. have raised official concerns about the current safety guidelines, the American Pediatrics Association, the California Medical Association, and the American Academy of Environmental Medicine. By the way, these 205 now scientists from 40 nations are not just a random group of scientists. These are people who have all authored peer-reviewed publications on EMF and biology or health, totaling more than 2,000, probably over 3,000 peer-reviewed publications on this topic to date. So this is a significant portion of the scientific community, and we've heard from many other members of this select group of the scientific community that's studied EMF, a great amount of support from them. Many people have philosophical or political positions in which they don't believe it's appropriate to make a public statement, even though they support what we're trying to do.
A lot of that boils down to whether or not empirical evidence is strong enough as opposed to precautionary principle, and we can certainly get into that. But I think you have made, and many of those who support this, scientists as well, have made analogies to tobacco and to lead and to asbestos. In other words, studies that were not conclusive, supposedly, but then turned out to be conclusive.
Well, not only have we made these assertions, the insurance industry, specifically Lloyd's of London and Swiss Re, two of the major reinsurers, have drawn these comparisons to tobacco and asbestos in using a justification of why the insurance industry should not provide product liability for things like cell phones and cell towers, or Wi-Fi in schools, for that matter.
In fact, I think you and a number of other scientists have said it's most harmful to like pregnant women and children. And you see it as a direct harm, and you see it as something that is that needs to be curtailed. But I'm wondering, will this law in Berkeley and other laws, if they're replicated like it, which would prohibit cell phones to be sold without a warning, really curtail or impede the kind of problems that you're concerned with?
It's an initial step in the right direction. Clearly, it doesn't go far enough. We need much more stronger guidelines and standards to protect the public. We need the industry to begin to develop safer technology. We need to educate medical professionals. We need governments, particularly the U.S., to start funding independent research. We've been too reliant on industry to fund research, and the result has been, as we've seen in with the tobacco industry in the 1950s, many of the scientists have been sort of co-opted into being silent on this issue publicly for fear of losing their funding. They've been promised by industry 20 to 30 year cohort studies, funding for 20 to 30 year studies, basically if they play ball with the industry and not raise people's concerns about this form of radiation. So the industry is basically, cell phone industry and wireless industry has basically adopted the tobacco industry playbook by co-opting the science, by manufacturing doubt, by hiring their own scientists to dissimulate. In fact, the last time I appeared on KQED Forum several years ago, the other scientist, who was a fellow from Canada, refused to answer any of the questions I had about challenging the research, the multinational study that he had just completed. Even when the moderator tried to intervene and get him to address those issues, he refused to do that. Well, recently he was outed and removed from a panel in Canada from the Royal Society of Scientists that was looking at the safety guidelines in Canada. And the reason was, during the period when he appeared on KQED Forum, he was being paid to do PR for the cell phone industry. He never disclosed that.
Joel Moskowitz, again with us by phone, directs the Center for Family and Community Health, the School of Public Health, University of California, Berkeley. And Alan Balmain here in studio is professor with the Helen Diller Family Comprehensive Cancer Center at UCSF School of Medicine. We do have recommendations, Dr. Balmain, to keep 5 to 25 millimeters. I mean, this comes right out of the FCC, away from the skin, depending on the model and depending on the limit that's necessary for radio frequency. Do we have proof that this is tied to cancer?
I would say at the moment definitely not proof, definitive proof that this is tied to cancer. I mean, let me be clear about where I'm coming from with some of this discussion. I think the whole advance in the use of these cell phones has its positive and its negative effects. I use one myself. My children use them. And they've contributed positively, and in some ways they're a pain to in my life, as in many other people's lives. But the issue of how damaging they are to our health is very much still an open question. And I think Dr. Moskowitz's comments are very well taken. We do need to debate these things and look at the evidence objectively and not emotionally. And try to come up with something that is advantageous to society as a as a whole. But if you look at the scientific evidence, and I'm not an expert in electromagnetic fields per se. I come from another direction, which looks at much more strongly mutagenic agents, where there is unequivocal evidence that these are carcinogenic. If you look at the EMF data, and I just printed out actually the most recent summary from 2015 from an EU consensus evaluation body, their conclusion, and this is a very august body, which is not in the pay of the cell phone companies, they have said that the epidemiological studies on mobile phone exposure do not show an increased risk of brain tumors. Furthermore, they do not indicate an increased risk for other cancers of the head and neck region. And this is has been the conclusion that has been reached by many different bodies. There was a report by IARC in 2011, which concluded that they put EMF cell phone type radiation into the category of 2B, which is means that it's possibly carcinogenic, but if you look at the definition of that category, there is insufficient evidence for carcinogenicity in humans. There's also insufficient evidence for carcinogenicity in animal models. So putting that together, they put it into category 2B as opposed to 2A, which is probably carcinogenic, and category 1, which is definitively carcinogenic. So some of the language I've heard is slightly disconcerting. People talk about cell phones being 2B carcinogens, and that's a misnomer, really. There's no such thing, in my view, as a 2B carcinogen, because it's a category which states that something is possibly a carcinogen. That's not the same thing as saying it is a category 2B carcinogen. Well, as far as I'm concerned, I think the cell phone companies should distribute the information as much as possible to the consumers. Information is always good. But I think we have to maintain a balance of common sense as to what the relative advantages and disadvantages are of doing this. If I can just add one more point. What is the downside of adding these warnings? You might think there is no downside, but I see a lot of very anxious people when you talk about carcinogens in the environment. This creates a lot of anxiety. Anxiety in itself is a health hazard. You know, what kind of a contribution is that going to have to people's level of awareness of the dangers around them if every cell phone has a warning sign on it? So I think we'll have to consider the balance of the different factors here and come to a sensible conclusion. There are many definitive carcinogens out there. You know, we've over the last few years identified mutation signatures in tumors from humans and from animals that are definitively linked to a carcinogen. There's nothing like that available for EMF.
Let me do this. Let me invite those of you listening. I know there are many strong sentiments about not only the Berkeley ordinance that will be going into effect, but just about cell phones and the potential damage that they possibly represent. And I'd like to hear from you. If you have something you'd like to say or ask, you are certainly enjoined and welcome to join us. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. There's also the big question about how strong the industry is in all this. You heard from Dr. Moskovitz and you heard from Alan Balmain on this, but it's a big question because San Francisco tried to mandate cell phone warnings back in 2010, and there was immediate response from the industry, and they'll probably be suing Berkeley on this as well. But we'd like to hear your thoughts, and if you would like to join us, now would be the time. Our toll-free number, again, is 866-733-6786. You can also email us. forum@kqed.org is our email address. You can also post questions or comments right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. And let me go first to some responses that are coming in here from, well, here's a tweet. These warning promoters are as confused as anti-vaccination groups. It's embarrassing. Open a textbook. Another listener writes online, this is another case of the left putting unfounded fears ahead of science. This new fad of being fearful of electromagnetism, that is EM waves, are literally all around us. We see using them, etc. has to stop. There's no peer-reviewed evidence that the EM waves from phones are harmful. The nearly 200 scientists calling for tougher regulations are about the number of scientists around the world who don't believe in global warming. Joel Moskowitz, we've got lots of callers coming in here, but I'd like your response to those two responses from our listeners.
They're both patently mistaken. For one, as I pointed out, the 200 scientists have published somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 peer-reviewed publications on EMF themselves, and there's many more showing evidence of harmful bioeffects, including stress proteins, reactive oxygen species or free radicals, DNA damage, penetration of the blood-brain barrier from very low-intensity exposures to microwave radiation. I'd like to address some of the comments Dr. Balmain made. Since the IARC meeting in 2011, there's been several major epidemiologic studies, peer-reviewed studies published, showing additional evidence of carcinogenicity in humans. So we now have three independent sets of studies, case-control studies. Well, I don't.
Forgive me. Let me ask Dr. Balmain. Are you aware of these studies?
Since I had some of these phone calls, I have looked at some of the literature. And I also spoke with the person in the UK who was head of the UK committee that looked into this in great detail, and he said,
"How convincing or persuasive do you find them?"
I don't find them persuasive, based on the conclusions of these people who work specifically in that field. These are highly experienced epidemiologists and scientists who have looked in detail at the many hundreds, if not thousands, of papers that cover this area. They've gone into it in much more detail than I have. Right. And their conclusion is that
we shouldn't get caught up on the cancer risk either, because we have evidence, at least a dozen peer-reviewed studies showing sperm damage and some observational data showing effects on male infertility. We also have preliminary evidence showing fetal effects that play out in the offspring in terms of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in human children and learning and memory problems in laboratory animals.
And we have a host of people who want to weigh in here, and I want to get to our callers. But Dr. Bellman, you're familiar with the studies that he's referencing now?
I know some of these studies, and I think they are included in many of these surveys of the overall health risks. As far as I'm aware, none of the national bodies who are not in the pay of the cell phone companies or anybody else have concluded that there is, as yet, no science that underpins the claim that there is a major health risk.
All right, let me bring in our callers because lots of people want to participate, and
well,
we have limited time.
The cell phone ordinance, by the way, is not a warning label. It's a simple, very short, four-sentence disclosure notice.
Yeah, Mayor Tom Bates said it's just a note of caution.
Has little to do with the science. It's basically reminding people that the federal government requires the manufacturer to provide the safety information. The industry has been burying the information in the manuals or in the cell phones. And we have polling data from Berkeley, to Professor Lessig, Lawrence Lessig from Harvard Law School, and Robert Post from the Yale School of Law, the dean, in fact, of the Yale School of Law, drafted this legislation. Professor Lessig sponsored a survey of Berkeley adults and found that very few people were aware. 15% were aware that there were manufacturer safety instructions, and most people, when informed that there were such instructions, said that they would like to be pointed out to them when they purchased the cell phone.
Alan Bellman wanted to respond to that, too.
We've got
a lot of callers here that I want to go to, so please.
I just want to say that, I mean, I think the fact that the information is made available on levels of exposure and that this may or may not exceed certain government-defined limits, that's absolutely fine. I don't have any objection whatsoever to that. It's good information for people to know about. But it's the extrapolation from that to you're going to get cancer.
Nobody is saying you're going to get cancer.
I think you are, actually.
In fact, most of the tumors that have been identified are extremely rare forms of brain cancer. They're very serious, but they're extremely rare. So even if we triple the likelihood, your lifetime risk estimate at most is like 1 in 80.
Well, this is a good and spirited debate, but I'm going to have to once again ask your forbearance because I want to bring our callers in. Bobby, join us. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I think this whole debate is pretty silly because in the end, some four-sentence fine print disclosure is not going to all of a sudden make consumers drop all their cell phones and put it in their pocket and never use it. So the real effect of any fine print on this is not going to affect anyone's behavior. The reality is, everyone's time would be much better spent trying to make the technology safer, trying to figure out how to get cell phone manufacturers to make safer phones, to improve on the technology, but some disclosure, not going to affect anybody.
All right. I'm glad for your opinion. Let me get another opinion here. Adam joining us from San Rafael. Adam, you're on.
Thank you. Couldn't agree more with the earlier caller. We went down this road with Prop 63, cancer warnings for things like pumping gasoline. It has zero effect on anyone's behavior. So making phones safer would be a good idea, but putting four sentences on the phone box just isn't going to change anyone's behavior.
All right. I thank you for the call. Let me go to you, Dr. Bellman, on a call, a listener who writes the following. The effect of electromagnetic frequencies on human cells is twofold. One, it transmits dangerous ionization effects on the cell nucleus, and the other effect is it will change the shape of the cell from a healthy spherical shape to an elongated or oval shape, which makes cells more prone to abnormal divisions, which can lead to cancer.
The first part of that is, I think, incorrect. There is no definitive evidence that I can see, and this has been looked into in great detail, for any ionizing effect. This is by definition, it's not an ionizing radiation. Ionizing radiation are things like X-rays, you know, therapeutic rays that are used for cancer treatment. These really hammer the DNA, they cause mutations, and this has been known for a long time. That kind of radiation is definitively carcinogenic. The radio frequency EMF is not ionizing. It does not directly damage DNA. What it does is it agitates cells and increases temperature. And this is difficult to translate that into a high cancer risk.
Joel Moskowitz, let me go to an online comment for you. A listener writes, Moskowitz has concocted quite a theory to propagate a career of research funding. Can you please reveal the nature of peer reviewers' comments at journals where he presumably attempts to publish his work?
That's kind of a funny comment, because I haven't received any research funding to do this work. I've been basically doing this pro bono for the last 6 years. I have been supported by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and they've encouraged me to keep talking about this issue, but they say they won't fund research on this issue because our government doesn't fund research on this issue since it's not a high priority.
Okay, I have another quick question for you, because I want to get Mary on here. You answered the question, and there's no research money coming in. And let me have Mary join us. Mary, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Mary. My question is, has there been any research to show whether the model of the phone, Android versus iPhone, for example, emits more or less radiation? And how about using like an earbud or a headset? Does that help reduce your risk as well?
All right, thank you, Mary. Again, that's to you, I believe, Joel Moskowitz.
There's a lot of debate whether any specific cell phone is any safer than another. Certainly some emit less radiation, but the way we're currently measuring it to certify these phones may be only marginally relevant to the safety risk, and that's part of the problem. The International EMF Appeal, which can be found at emfscientist.org, does address the safety of the technology and a variety of other things, and I advise people to take a look at that appeal. I'd also suggest, if people are interested in the Berkeley Ordinance, to look at my website, saferemr.com, where I've been basically providing a summary of the policy updates and also have links to all the media coverage to date, including The Guardian in the UK has covered both of these issues. CBS News in D.C. has covered both these issues. This is an international as well as a national issue.
Right, let me break in here and remind you that you are listening to Forum. We're talking to Joel Moskowitz and Alan Balmain, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED Radio, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to another caller here. And Tina, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
A pleasure. My background is physics. I'm calling just to the attention of the discussion that
Tina, we got a very bad phone line here. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to ask you to call again on another line. Jim in Berkeley writes, what about dangers related to routers? Where can someone find real information about the matter? Any help from you, Dr. Balmain, on that?
Absolutely none whatsoever.
No, Joel Moskowitz?
I have a post on Wi-Fi in the schools that might be useful on my saferemr.com website. We know we have far less research on Wi-Fi radiation, but the general belief is that this, too, is probably carcinogenic. By the way, very few of the 205 signers at this point would say it's definitively carcinogenic.
Well, where does that term carcinogenic to be come from? Alan Balmain mentioned that term carcinogenic.
Probable or highly probable.
We're talking over each other. Alan Balmain, you said carcinogenic to be. Where does that term come from?
Carcinogenic to, you mean carcinogen to be?
Yes.
So that means the category to be. That's a number two, and
right.
A B was the category assigned to EMF by the IARC agency in 2011. So that's a category for
assigning
chemicals and radiation.
That EMF is electromagnetic fields, and
that means it's a possible carcinogen, not that it's definitively carcinogen.
Understood. And we'll get another caller on here from Oakland. Rob, you're on.
Yes, most medical studies require some kind of control group. This is why placebos are given for medical drug testing. And I was curious where the control group is found for these studies.
Joel Moskowitz.
For the case control studies, it's been from the general population. Obviously, it's getting harder and harder to find people that are unexposed to cell phone radiation or other forms of wireless radiation. The cordless phone, by the way, has a similar kind of radiation, and some of the case control studies actually ignored those exposures, which would lead to smaller risk estimates. The best research in the world has been done by a team led by Leonard Hardell in Sweden, and he looks at cordless and cell phone radiation and finds similar kinds of associations with brain cancer risk. Hardell recently also has published data from a national inpatient registry in Sweden showing increases in brain tumor risk in the Swedish population. We're beginning to see increases in certain types of brain tumors or in certain subpopulations for certain types of brain tumors in the United States in the peer-reviewed literature. So So we have the early warning signals. It may be artifactual, but should we just sit on our hands and wait for 20, 30 years before we take some precautionary action? And as one of your callers asked, yes, there are simple things that can be done to reduce the risk. Keep the cell phone away from your body. Do not put it in your shirt or in your bra or in your pants pocket. Do not hold it up close to your head when you make calls. They're very simple things. Hands-free, text, speakerphone. Very simple precautions can be taken. You can turn your Wi-Fi router off at night. Why do you need to waste the energy?
But, you know, there have been so many things that have come under the precautionary principle. Let me get to this with you, Alan Balmain. I mean, if you look online, you can find probably just about almost every product that's sold retail falling into some danger vis-a-vis the precautionary principle. When you look at the kinds of things that Dr. Moskowitz, what's right, Joel, for your title here? I'm not even sure. Dr. Moskowitz. Okay, when Dr. Moskowitz raises these concerns about the long term, we really don't know again. And so should we be cautious on that behalf, or how much need we be cautious from your perspective?
No, absolutely. I think we have to be cautious because, I mean, as a scientist, you can never say there is nothing there. We're all different. We're all genetically different. For all I know, for all the community knows, there could be specific individuals who are very rare in the community who are highly sensitive to EMF forces. We just don't know enough to be able to reach that conclusion yet. So I think we should err on the side of caution. But the present guidelines, I agree with what Dr. Moskowitz just said. You're minimizing exposure. Doesn't do any harm. It's not no great big deal to do that. So why not just do that?
And on that note of agreement,
an element of common sense in the whole debate.
I think it's good to conclude on a note of agreement. And let me thank Alan Balmain, who's professor with the Helen Diller Family Comprehensive Cancer Center at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine, and Dr. Joel Moskowitz, who directs the Center for Family and Community Health with the School of Public Health at UC Berkeley. And we thank you, our listeners. We are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. In the hour ahead, we're going to sort of relax a little and talk about a lighter topic. We're going to talk about summer travel, both internationally and domestic. We have three travel guides with us and three veteran travel writers. I hope you will join us for that. Thank you for joining us for this and for all of us here at KQED. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.